Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Top Order Podcast. I'm kind of not embarrassed to say that I'm feeling pretty incredibly flat this morning, and after New Zealand scored 400 in Bengaluru and it wasn't enough. Baldy's little dance there has got me in some sort of spirits. But, you know, of course there was another game on the slate last night, which Australia kind of put 1.5 feet in the semi-finals, and England's World Cup defence officially ended. We'll have all of that and more right after this. Boys, I sort of feel like I've been punched in the stomach this morning. As I said, very, very flat. You know, kind of still trying to make sense of what happened last night. As I'm sure every New Zealand fan felt pretty confident when New Zealand scored 400. I sat there at 50 overs or four, that entire New Zealand innings, kind of just smiling and grinning and telling my children what amazing cricketers we had. And yeah, then kind of the next 25 overs of the game, it just wasn't such great watching. How are you doing this morning, Raj?
Oh, that's a great line. The great cricketers that we have. Look, I actually, I'm a bit upbeat this morning, which is strange because I went to bed. I don't think I've ever had that transition in about an hour and a half where I was just on top of the world, and then literally, it was raining on our parade when I went to bed. About an hour and a half later. And then to make it worse, I don't know if you guys were watching the coverage, but they actually, during the rain delay, started showing the New Zealand versus Africa highlights, which was not a great option for us Kiwis to be watching that. It completely let the air out of my tyres, but I'm going to look at it with a positive lens today. Baldy?
Well, I similarly went to bed at sort of 400 for six, and Manus Labuschagne donning up a storm in the Australia game, and I decided that it would be more entertaining for me to read The Hound of the Baskervilles instead. So I went to bed with Australia digging themselves into a great hole. It turns out Australia dug themselves out of that hole and then sort of shoveled all of that soil over to New Zealand, and they ended up getting buried by a mound of soil on the other side. Not a great analogy, but it's early this morning. And we'll increase the quality of the pod from here, certainly from an analogy perspective for me.
Yeah, look, I'm very pleased that you both started out helping me with a few smiles, because it was a difficult watch, as I've said. I think, why don't we start with some positives, though? Talk a little bit about New Zealand's batting. You know, kind of let's go through it chronologically, because that at least is more fun from that point of view. Raj, you've disappeared on the video, but hopefully you're still there for us. Can you talk to me about Rachin Ravindra to start with? Because, I mean, just astonishing. And I just kept mentioning, as I said, I was watching that first innings with my kids there and kind of just talking to them. I kept just saying to them, he's 23, Diskit. He's 23 and he's just scored the most ODI hundreds in a World Cup for New Zealand. just staggering stuff.
Look, it was I was absolutely astonished by him. I continue to be astonished by him. We have talked him up a lot in the recent past, but I don't think anyone was expecting a run fest like we've seen from Richen Ravindra this this tournament. He's filled a massive hole at the top of the innings with, you know, Kane Williamson being out and not really having another opener that we've, you know, persisted with for the last sort of year and a half. And he's done an incredible job. There was that one shot, which I was telling you boys this morning, that when he played that pull shot off Harris Ralph, it was incredible. It stopped time in my house. We had to pause everything that was going on so that we could watch that shot again. It was incredible. But look, he's going from strength to strength. The thing that's impressing me the most, and I think Williamson and Ravindra both did this, is they timed their innings really well. They still built that platform after we lost the Conway wicket and allowed the finishers to have that platform and really sort of push towards 400, which was a great score for us to have in that first inning.
I think that the thing that I guess is standing out to me about Richen when I kind of think about it is I obviously scored that 100 in that first game and you know that was amazing, and it was, you know, the breakout performance and all of those sort of superlatives. But then I guess in my head I kind of thought, okay, like he's going to fail at some point here and we're going to have to still talk about him in positive terms. Like he's going to have some challenges in this World Cup. And I think that the amazing thing and what I've found so hard to believe is that he just hasn't. And, you know, it was sort of the highest praise yesterday when I can't remember who was on commentary, maybe Ian Smith, maybe Ian Bishop. At one point, one of them just said, like, this is no, like, he got to 50, I think, and they said, and it's no surprise because he's been doing this all tournament and he's just become someone that we rely on. We sit there and we think, okay, he's going to go out there and he's going to get runs today. And yeah, to think that, one, like he wouldn't be at this tournament if Michael Bracewell hadn't been injured. Two, it sounds like he wouldn't have played the first game if Lachie Ferguson had been 100% fit to start the tournament. So, you know, now that we're sitting there talking about, you know, I don't know, the future of New Zealand cricket, and that seems like a remarkable sort of over-exaggeration, but he's just been so good in this tournament, and he's breaking records for youngest player to do this and youngest player to do that. And, you know, even, like I said, most World Cup hundreds for New Zealand. I don't know. I mean, there sort of is almost no more words for how good he is. Baldy, why don't you jump in and help us out with talking about Kane? Because, again, like, yeah, I was just sitting there thinking he played, you know, we didn't think he would make this tournament. And then he comes back in after 6 months out, doesn't play a game, scores 80-odd, wins us the game against Bangladesh, but fractures his thumb. Sits on the sideline, comes back in, and then plays this innings. I mean, it's just staggering.
Yeah, a remarkable comeback again from Kane Williamson. And it was so surprising. I didn't know that he was playing this game. We sat down at the pub. We'd had a pretty bad day in Clubland out in the dirt, and repaired back to a local establishment for a refreshing beverage to sort of warm the cockles of our heart because it had been such an ordinary day. Looked up on the screen and Kane was already sort of 50-50 not. And I looked over to a teammate and went, is Kane playing this game? And sure enough, he was. Not long later, he took off his gloves and didn't look like he even had a splint on his thumb. It was like the recovery from Kane's broken thumb is remarkable. And his innings was all that more remarkable because he picked up as if he'd never left off. All the shots that we expect to see from Kane Williamson were there. The late cut was there, drove beautifully down the ground. And as his innings wore on, he got more and more confident, took on more and more risk. And, you know, on 95 to try and slap one down the ground over mid-off to bring up 100, yeah, sure, he got caught in the boundary, but that's the most un-Kane-like shot I think I've ever seen. But he's just in such good form at the moment, even despite his injuries. It must be, as you say, Raj, if you're going to take silver linings out of this loss to Pakistan, Kane's return and the form of Richen are two of the highlights for me, alongside the great finishing we saw last night. It's hard to go from 240 to 1 to 400 by sort of picking up and coming in and accelerating from ball one. But I thought the New Zealand middle order did a superb job, a terrific job of picking up the gauntlet that Rutchin and Kane laid down and taking it to the next level. Because it could have been so easily 240 for one, 290 for six, and then you're crawling your way to 330. But as it was, they did a superb job of accelerating their innings and, you know, scored the last, 14 overs at 10s, 140 off the last 14 overs. Awesome stuff.
Yeah, Stu, just your comments on that lower order, you know, particularly the Glenn Phillips, the Mark Chapman. We've sort of been missing that in our batting lineup, and I feel like this is one of those innings that actually went to plan. If you had a plan on the whiteboard before going out, this actually went to plan.
Oh, yeah, look, they did a really nice job. And it was, you know, I thought Mark Chapman's tournament might have been over now that Jimmy Neesham came in and performed so well. Obviously, Neesham's, I don't know if he was fit for this game. I'm not 100% sure. I'm guessing he probably wasn't, the fact that he wasn't playing. But, you know, the fact that Chapman comes in and elevated to five, which I thought was interesting at the time to put him up there. I think, you know, maybe the left-hand-right-hand combination, maybe also the fact that he had a bit of success against Pakistan in the past. And, you know, he's that was a really nice innings for him, I think, in particular, to kind of give him some, not, he probably doesn't need the confidence, but I think just to get him in there and to play an innings of substance, I suppose, because he hasn't had many opportunities in this World Cup, and largely that's not been his fault. So, yeah, to come in and do the job there. Phillips, some of the shots that Phillips plays, I've been a little critical of him in this tournament, and I think even showed a little bit last night at the start of his innings that I don't think he hits the gaps early on in his innings as well as he might. But, you know, the fact that he is able to make up for it with some of those boundaries and some of the shots that he plays, that it doesn't seem like his hands are there, and then he just goes whoosh, and it sort of, you know, hits the toe end of the bat or the middle of the bat most of the time, but the toe end even, and flies over the ropes for six. So, yeah, look, you know, he's a quality player. We've talked about him a lot in the past 12 months. And again, what contribution he might make to New Zealand in all formats going forward. So, yeah, look, very, very, very good. And at 400 for one, you kind of thought things are going very well. I think I will add, you know, we've talked all about New Zealand and it, again, probably it hasn't really been, it's not, we're not going to talk in glowing praise for too many bowlers in this game, but I will add that I think that Mohammad Wasim Jr.'s, he bowled 10 overs, 3 for 60, and I think that those figures are so much better than they actually look on paper. I mean, they actually look great on paper considering the rest of the score, but, you know, 3 for 60, you wouldn't ordinarily pinpoint someone like that and go, they've had a remarkable day with the ball, but, you know, on a day where everybody struggled, Shaheen Shah Afridi, you know, one of the best bowlers in the world, really just didn't look at the races in that game. Mohammad Wasim was absolutely spectacular, and actually picking up a couple of those wickets, you know, every time, even though New Zealand was doing a great job at the end there to pick up Phillips, to pick up Chapman, I think that did save 20-30 runs at the end there. So, you know, huge performance from him. Anyone want to add anything on the New Zealand batting or Pakistan's bowling before we move on to, I guess, Fakhar Zaman's incredible display?
Just on Mohammad Wasim, I completely agree. He actually did something very similar against Bangladesh, came in at the death, hit the wickets, bowls are, you know, not a traditional up and down seam, bowls with a little bit of angle, does something a little bit different, and a bit quicker than you think when you're watching him bowl on TV. But no, great death bowling from him once again. I do have a bit of a confession to make. Prior to the Pakistan innings started, I texted Stu, and I said to him that Pakistan were not going to make 200 in their batting innings. I was almost right.
Yep.
I was dependent on rain. Tell us about the Pakistani innings and then the rain playing a bit of spoiler in this game.
Oh, do I have to? I guess I do. Like, you know, you mentioned, I think last time when we talked about that Pakistan-Bangladesh game, that the thing you highlighted was the sound off Fakhar Zaman's bat. And, I mean, you know, it wasn't much fun for me to watch it, but that sound again, it's actually incredible. And, I mean, the way he went about this innings, I don't know, it was absolutely incredible. And the thing is that I don't know that I can be enormously critical of New Zealand's bowling. They weren't good. Southey, I think, bowled really, really well up front. He was able to change the pace and he sort of found a good area to bowl to Tufekeur Zaman to kind of keep him tucked up. And I think Trent Bolt got a bit tangled up trying to go, okay, like sort of out bowl him. He tried to bowl, you know, a wicket-taking ball. He pitched it up maybe a bit more than he might have liked in the end if he thinks about it after this game. But, I mean, some of the shots that Tufekeur Zaman played, there was one off Southey that he, like, scooped over to the leg side off, I don't know, the absolute toe end of the bat. And I went, oh, yeah, cool, he's out now. Like, he's finally mishit one, he's out. And it went for six, which I guess, you know, goes to talk about, you know, the grounds and stuff that we've talked about before. I think the boundaries are about 60 metres square, or not much past 60 metres, and the bats and all that today. Glenn Phillips bowled one that, you know, I think he almost beat Tufekeur Zaman in the flight. Tufekeur was about, like, way out in front of the ball when he was slog sweeping. And he still hit Phillips, like, 30 rows back. He was timing everything, and it just seemed like there was nothing that New Zealand could do. And, you know, I did think when the rain came that, you know, 140 for one, I think it was, and all the models at ESPN on, you know, score predictor, all the ones that they were showing on commentary on the Crick Info, they all had New Zealand, like, way ahead on the win predictor. But Pakistan was ahead on DLS. Which I did think was interesting. I mean, I kind of don't know that it's worth getting into a big debate about that. But yeah, when they went off the field at 140 for one and Pakistan was ahead when the rain came, it wasn't, you know, you're sort of sitting there going, oh, what do we do now? And yeah, it wasn't great. Baldy, anything to add on that?
No, there's nothing I can add for New Zealand fans that makes the hollowness of this defeat to Pakistan via Duckworth Lewis any better. It's just about the worst way to lose a cricket game. It's not the worst, but it's one of. I will say for Pakistan fans, though, that they paced that chase beautifully. You know, they needed boundaries. They got boundaries from Tufekeur Zaman. He hit 11 sixes and 8 fours in that innings. In 81 balls, that's a boundary every 4 deliveries from him. An outstanding performance. And it goes to show that if Pakistan get going, it's not just the Bubba and Rizwan show. If they can get contributions from the top of their order, they can be a super dangerous cricket side in the back end of this tournament. Maybe they've left their run too late, maybe not, who knows. Let's see what happens in that last fixture that Pakistan have, but this has been an outstanding performance. And if you look at it, 25.3 overs, 200 for one, chasing 400, Pakistan are right in the game. New Zealand are also right in the game. This is probably, if you look at it, a 50-50 chase, maybe. But Pakistan happened to be on the right side of the Duckworth Lewis Stern model by 10, 14, 15 runs when the rain came. And unfortunately for New Zealand, they weren't able to get back on the field after that. And Pakistan take home an all-important 2 points.
Yeah, it is a shame around that Duckworth Lewis because, you know, rain did play spoiler. But Pakistan have only really done half the job there. When you're defending 400, I think that you have a real chance, no matter what sort of stage the innings is at. But you know, all indications were that Pakistan were in complete control, really, for that chasing innings. We do, I believe, have a bit of a Tufekeur Zaman problem. I believe that was his 400 against us this calendar year.
It's amazing!
Which is incredible in itself. That sort of leads me now to the New Zealand selection queries and really the last few games, and in particular the Australian game and this one, where our bowling innings was just out of control. We didn't have any clue how to wrest the momentum back against Australia. Glenn Phillips was able to put his masking cape on and sort of bring it back, but that was not the case this time. It seemed like we had no clue how to wrest that back. And then also, you know, selection queries around, was Nisham fit? Should we have gone in with 3 bowlers? Rachin Ravindra didn't even get a go with the ball. He would have been the 4th spinner to bowl in the innings if he had have gotten a bowl. Well, what's going on with our bowling and selection in general, Stu?
Well, the bowling's certainly fallen off the wagon here. I mean, you know, we've talked, I think if we look at the first you know, four games that New Zealand won, what they did really well was pick up wickets during the middle, and they never kind of they never let the opposition get big partnerships together. Every time it seemed like a partnership was developing, they were able to take a wicket, and that just hasn't happened in these last few games. And you know, yeah, I don't really know what to put it down to in terms of particularly someone like Trent Bolt, who I don't think he's been at his best in this World Cup. You know, conditions obviously not the most suited for him, but he has spent a lot of time in India, and I thought he bowled brilliantly actually against South Africa in a, you know, in a disappointing course for New Zealand for the bowlers. I thought he really stood out as someone who figured out the conditions and was able to bowl with real control and really good areas and sort of figure out what was needed. But I mean, look, you could make a case that the injuries, obviously they've hit us pretty hard. The fact that Matt Henry's not available, the fact that I'm getting the impression, I don't know 100% for sure, but that Lachie Ferguson probably wasn't fit to play this game. We did have Kyle Jameson over there, but look, he's just jumped on a plane from Christchurch, you know, 3 days ago, you know, and turned up. We all sat there going, geez, Ish Sodhi, he's a good bowler. He hasn't had a game yet. What, you know, why has he not had a game? And I think if you look at the situation and you bat first and you think we're going to pile on 400, you think this is great. Ish has got, you know, a big score to bowl at. He can settle in and you know, be able to sort of work his magic that he's done in the past. But, you know, it just didn't happen today. And he kind of got thrown to the wolves a little bit in that after the rain break. And look, I think in hindsight, if they knew that it was going to rain again in three overs or whatever it was, I don't think there's any way that Ish would have bowled, because, you know, you would at that point, the problem was that Ish Sodhi still had six overs to bowl and we only had 18 overs left or something. So you're kind of going, okay, well, how do we make up our overs? We're going to bowl Bolt. We're going to bowl Ish to try and get through a couple of his overs now. But look, they just targeted him. Baba Azam, you know, Ish bowled a half track of first ball, half volley the second ball, and Baba Azam just puts both them away, and second over, Fakhar Zaman just takes him down, really. You know, it was as simple as that. And, you know, that 20 run over, the Duckworth Lewis Stern situation was a 21 run win. So, yeah, I think in hindsight, you're probably not playing Ish. If you knew how all of that was going to play out, you might play Kyle Jameson instead. You might bowl Mitchell Santner up in those overs afterwards. But, you know, it's really easy to say that. And, you know, even you guys mentioned it before. Yes, 400, you kind of think that you're going to win that game and that Duckworth Lewis kind of hurts you because of the fact that it shortens the game and it gives Pakistan a chance to be only half the job done but win that game. But they were cruising. They were honestly just cruising. And they, you know, Bully, you said it before. Fakhar Zaman was hitting a boundary every four balls. It felt like he was hitting a boundary every second ball. You know, like, that. They were just doing it so easy. And, yeah, I guess we might talk about now what that actually means to the tournament, because we're 20 minutes in and we still haven't talked about Australia, England. But New Zealand, remarkably, is still kind of, like, in the box seat on paper to make the semi-finals, but we're absolutely no chance if we bowl like that. You know, first we've got to perform and beat Sri Lanka, and when we, you know, we've got to bowl much, much better than that if we're going to make any impact in any games, you know, assuming results even go our way. And look, Lachie Ferguson, I think he needs to come back pretty, pretty quick so that we can have some kind of wicket-taking power in the middle there. And yeah, It was a tough, tough watch, I have to say, from a New Zealand point of view. Baldy, do you want us... Why don't we move to the Australia game? Because, yeah, it's been a while that we've been talking about this one, and you kind of helped me get some emotions out. But I have to say, I haven't seen as much of this game as maybe ordinarily I would have in a day that New Zealand hadn't played. 287 or 286 on the board. Australia, kind of contributions from everyone, no, you know, major contribution that you might have liked. 286 feels like a bit of a middling score in this World Cup, but obviously still proved enough. You said before, Manus Labuschagne was boring the pants off you to the point where you were, you know, out of there, turn the TV off. So How were you sort of feeling, I guess, when you when you go to bed and the situation, and then when you kind of catch yourself back up on the game this morning?
Yeah, like I said, when I turned the game off when Australia were sort of 2 for 50, 2 for 60, and Marnus, I think, was 13 off 30 deliveries, and I thought, okay, well, we're going to get to see some test match like batting from Smith and Marnus, and we got a bit of that, to be fair. But I think what Australia did is they lost early wickets. They have had fantastic contributions from their opening pair throughout this tournament, whether it was Warner and Marsh or Warner and Travis Head of late. They've had awesome starts. They didn't get a great start in this game. They were 2 for not many, even though the run rate was good. But Smith and Marnus Labuschagne did a really good job of making sure that they didn't get too tied down, and they built Australia's innings back up so that by the end of it, provided they got contributions from their lower order, their finishers, they could get somewhere between sort of 275 and 300, and that's what transpired. So despite the fact that Marnus was boring me to read, he ended up, after that, getting 60 off 50 and actually catching up a little bit. His 70 off 80 balls proved decisive in terms of the outcome of this match. What I really liked, and we might get a Dorothy Dixer to re-edit into this pod, but what I really liked is that we got contributions from the lower order. We got contributions from Green, we got contributions from Stoinis, and then we got a little bonus cameo from Adam Zampa at the end, sort of 29 off 19. If I could have asked for anything going into this game, knowing that we had Green and Stoinis replacing Marsh and Maxwell, who were out, it would be to get something out of those guys. And we got, what, nearly 90 runs from the two of them, which is really, really pleasing from an Australian perspective, because now we know that we can get some meaningful impact, some meaningful outcome from Green and Stoinis, which has been a question mark for this entire tournament.
Yeah, just going back to the start of the innings, and you know, you're talking about when they lost a few wickets. When Australia were 2 for 38 after the Warner dismissal, I felt like that game could have gone either way. But it was good to see Smith and Labuschagne rally, as you said there. So you've mentioned Maxwell and Marsh, and they're both going to, I assume, they will be available for the later parts of the tournament.
Yeah, I have some news on that later on.
Okay. Awesome. What does that team look like for you? Because Green and Stoinis have given you those contributions that you have been missing. Maxwell and Marsh are kind of people who walk straight back into the side, but maybe haven't been performing as a unit. What I know you're extremely happy that, you know, the top seven have actually contributed almost evenly, apart from a couple there. Inglis batting at 5, still got the problem with it, with a wicketkeeper maybe not scoring the runs that you're looking for. What does it look like for you, your top 11? Do you actually have an understanding of what that looks like?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Marsh comes back in immediately and Maxwell comes back in immediately. And it's probably Green and Stoinis to miss out again. Although I think that there's probably a conversation that you could have as to whether or not Marnus misses out. He's contributed in this game, but he's probably the fall guy for a concussion substitution coming back and him dropping out. I think Australia will probably drop Cameron Green. We didn't see him at the bowling crease in this game. Australia got some contributions from Stoinis with the ball, and they really like what Stoinis can do with the ball in white ball cricket. So I think if there's anyone that's going to drop out, it will probably be Marnus and Cameron Green. And then you've got Maxwell coming into that lower middle order batting 5 and 6. And then Mitchell Marsh would come in and bat probably 3 or 4. I don't mind Mitchell Marsh batting at 4 for Australia. I feel like he has to be more proactive, more aggressive if he comes in that middle over period of 11 to 40. I think he's actually at his best when he opens the batting, because he can take bowlers on knowing that he's only got 2 fielders out and he can go over the top with relative impunity. But he's so strong and so powerful that he can hit the ball out of the ground if he gives himself 10 or 12 balls to get in, and then he can sort of start to go. So I think that's Australia's formula going forward. I think Marnus will be unlucky to miss out now that he's made 70 and kind of held this innings together in what was an important win for Australia. But if you look at the match-winning potential that Marsh and Maxwell both have, I think that's going to be important come semi-final and final time.
And going into the second innings, 286 on the board, Tell us how you're feeling, and once again, your Mitchell Starc barometer off his first ball.
Well, yeah, it wasn't the Mitchell Starc first ball that we were hoping for, but it's the result that counts, right? It's the impact, the result that counts. As we said in the last
pod, look at down the leg side.
He does. Yeah, exactly. Normally, that would indicate to me a not great Mitchell Starc performance, but we got away with one there in the first ball of the innings, and a good catch from Inglis to move well down the leg side to take that. Look, if I'm Australia, I'm feeling pretty confident going in with 287. That's a defendable score if you bowl well. And our seamers bowled reasonably well, but we got a fantastic contribution again from Adam Zampa. We go back 3 or 4 weeks, 2 games into the tournament. Adam Zampa was a shell of the player we saw in last night's game and we've seen so far through the tournament. So after 2 games, I don't think he had very many wickets at all. He's now got 19, which leads all comers in the tournament. I'm looking at the stats desk here, and I'm just bringing it up because at the moment, he is now averaging something like, 17 with the ball, striking at 18. So he's taking a wicket every 3 overs. The most important thing for me is the economy rate is only 5.5. Whereas you look at Starc, 6.3. You look at Cummins is over 6. Hazelwood's been pretty miserly. He's been at 5.3. But that economy rate from Zampa at 5.52, I think is the most, not the most important because he's taking wickets, but he's also not leaking a tremendous amount of runs for Australia in those middle overs. So he's been fantastic. He looks back to full fitness. He's moving well in the outfield. He took a terrific catch that if you had a look at him in the first 2 games, he was not moving well at all in the outfield. So whatever injury he's had, he's back, and he's getting more and more ticks. Every time I look down at my notes, he's getting more and more ticks next to his name with the big black pen. So he was outstanding for Australia and just the tonic we needed because we don't have any other frontline spinner in the squad. We don't have any Sodhi to call on. We don't have any extra spinners there, no Ashton Agar, etc. So he is very, very important to Australia's chances. And guys like Travis Head, Stoinis, etc., the more overs we can get out of them at, you know, 5 and a bit, which is what we got from Head, that's all to the good.
Yeah, Zampa was this. Yeah, as you say, this is just about your perfect Zampa performance, and the fact that, I mean, some of the shots he played, he smashed Mark Wood, smashed Mark Wood down the ground. I really enjoyed that. I have to say, as a spinner who batted lower down, I do relish when lower order players kind of get the tonk out and start smashing bowlers. So I did really enjoy that. I really enjoyed the Mark Wood Cameron Green battle. I did, that was pretty fun to watch. As it's always, again, Mark Wood kind of hasn't been at his best in this tournament, like a lot of the English side, but it's pretty fun to watch when someone's ramping it up, and Cameron Green was, when he was prepared to kind of throw everything at it when Wood was charging in there. So that was good to watch. A positive for England, I think you'd have to say that Adil Rashid bowled really, really well. Lovely sort of flight and the way he sort of slowed down his bowling at different times. And Chris Wokes and David Willey, the kind of experienced campaigners that have kind of copped a lot in this tournament about the way that they performed. I think bowled, Wokes in particular bowled very well up front and then came back at the end and sort of took a couple of wickets as well. But look, it hasn't been a great campaign for England. And Baldy, I think you wanted to sort of highlight a match report that hasn't missed, let's say.
Yeah, Andrew Miller's lined England up as only he can. So this is Andrew Miller writing in the official match report for ESPN Crick Info. And I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but I'm going to attribute it to him. We know it's his work. And he writes in his official match report in the opening salvo, "It's over." And that's not simply the worst World Cup defense in the history of international sport. We'll come back to that. Everything that, for 8 heady years, had been taken for granted about England's white ball batting has vanished without a trace, as if some Hollywood baddie had pinched a sports almanac from the future and set the dials on the team's DeLorean for the 2015 World Cup. We've re-entered an epoch of endless, desperate failure, the miracle of 2019 lost forever to some branch line of the space-time continuum. You can't go anywhere from there. That is just a brilliant opening salvo from Andrew Miller. He hasn't missed. He goes on to roast Joe Root in, you know, a retirement special kind of roast situation. I think, you know, Shaq could be proud.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Look, I think that probably the England conversation, I had a little bit of a chat with Binksy about kind of what's happened to their campaign. It's probably one that we talk about in more depth once it, you know, once the tournament is over, or once we sort of do get together for this weekend cricket. Because, yeah, as I said to Binksy, you know, a few days ago, a week ago, it's just been really surprising for me. I had penciled them in. I think Andrew Miller says in there that they had penciled themselves in for a semi-final spot, and I had done that, like, almost in pen, not in pencil. You know, I just kind of thought, this is a great one-day side, or great white ball side, they'll be there, and it just has not, they just have not been here at this tournament, basically, and they're just getting pasted by everyone, and it's really, you know, even in this game, they're 100 for 2, kind of chasing 286, with Stokes and Milan at the crease, and you kind of thought, okay, like, they can... Stokes loves playing against Australia, loves these big moments. They can go on and win here and kind of get a bit of moral victory back into their campaign, but it just all fell apart, and it really took Wokes and Willie and Rashid to kind of, again, get a bit of respectability back into that scorecard. Anything you want to add, Raj?
Yeah, probably just around the Australian team again, for Baldy. How do you feel about Patrick Cummins' performances, mainly as a bowler? It's probably what I'm focusing on most. He's been chipping away regularly, you know, with a wicket or two, but there's no real games where that I can remember him really grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck. He is, you know, at times we've talked about him being the best bowler in the world, you know, red ball, white ball, but he hasn't quite shown that this tournament.
No, and he's been overshadowed by Zampa in the last, you know, five or six games. Hazelwood, Cummins and Stark have been pretty workmanlike in terms of their performance. If there's one criticism I could level at this Australian team is that other than this game and maybe the India game, from memory, I don't think we've had much in the way of penetration in terms of the first 10 overs taking early wickets. We did in this game, obviously, with that first cherry. But Australia often have let sides off to good starts. However, having said that, if you have a look at their stats, they're all hovering around sort of average. Let's have a look here. Stark's averaging 40 with the ball, but Cummins and Hazelwood are 31, 32, not respectively. That's the other way around, Baldy. Well done. But they're also, you know, striking at Hazelwood's 35, Cummins 32, Stark is 38. So they're all striking around somewhere between 30 and 40. And they're all conceding somewhere around six runs and over. So it's been a pretty middling performance from Australia's seamers. Good contributions, but not the contributions we kind of expect from Josh Hazelwood, ranked number one white ball bowler in the world. Pat Cummins has been ranked number one red ball bowler in the world on occasion. And, you know, we know what Mitchell Stark can do with white ball in major tournaments. He has been spectacular for Australia in the past. So it hasn't quite all come together for Australia in terms of their seam attack, but they've done just enough to win sort of four or five games now on the bounce. And Adam Zampa has come in off the back of that and given Australia real impetus in those middle overs, and he's done a superb job. But yeah, if I could ask for anything, maybe it's a little bit more wicket-taking ability at the top of the order. But, you know, you have to say that Australia have done a pretty good job over the last five or six games of containing sides as their seam attack. And they've got, you know, little bits and pieces here from Maxwell, from Stoinis. So he got a couple in this game. They've got a little bit from Travis Head as well. So we haven't been taken down too badly when we've gone to our fifth bowling option. And I think other sides in that semi-final contention, India, South Africa, etc., will be looking at that and going, actually, we can really take down, you know, Maxwell, Head, Stoinis, etc.
Are you starting to believe, Baldy? Are you starting to believe that, you know, five wins in a row now, you know, Australia's campaign that was in tatters after the first two games is, you know, is now sort of, like I said, 1.5 feet in the semi-final. I think it's better than that, really. They're probably there. I think, you know, things would have to go pretty horribly in these last couple of games for them to not make it. Are you starting to think that, you know, you're going to be there probably in a, you know,
the winner or probably playing the loser of tonight's game between India and South Africa in the semi-final in that sort of 2-3 slot?
Mm. I think there is cause to have belief in this Australian side. I think we're a little bit off India and South Africa yet. I don't think Australia are as explosive as South Africa through the middle, particularly if Marnus is playing the way that he's playing at the moment. Smith is still a little bit out of form. We haven't really seen the best of him. So I don't think Australia are on the same par as South Africa and India, but they've certainly improved their performances markedly since they played India and South Africa earlier in the tournament and were, you know, well beaten by both of those teams. So I think there is hope for Australia. I don't think it's a case of Australia will go into that game, either of those semi-final games against either India or South Africa, if we make it that far as favourites. But I think we're certainly a much more complete-looking cricket side now than we were two games into the tournament. We've had contributions from the key people across the lineup at some point in the tournament, which gives me some hope that the ability is there, the form is there. We've just got to make sure that Australia put it all together when it really, really counts. What gives me hope is that Australia have done that in the past in semi-finals of big tournaments. We have put other sides under pressure and we have executed really, really well in those tough situations. So those guys will know what's required of them. I think cool heads need to prevail in that Australia camp. We don't have to hit the first ball that we face out of the park to be a chance of winning a semi-final. We can take 5 or 10 balls, get our eye in, and then go for it. Australia really will need to take wickets early, though, against India and South Africa if there to be any chance. We know that South Africa has got a really strong middle order, but I think we can put it under pressure by taking early wickets. And I think India are the same, really. You need to take 6 wickets against India to be a chance of beating that side. And I mean 6 wickets inside the first 30 overs to make sure that India can't build towards a massive score on the back end of their batting innings. So we need to take wickets with the new ball. And Adam Zampa becomes even more important in those games, because if he can't take the same number of wickets and bowl with the same economy that he has so far through these 5 wins, then Australia are going to stare down the barrel of having to chase 380, which I don't think they can do.
And look, we've gone longer than any of our daily updates so far talking about these two games. I think they were both warranted this longer conversation. They're, you know, two of the more important games up until this point of the World Cup. Just quickly before we go, Raj, big game tonight, India, South Africa. Obviously, both, I think, again, you know, India's officially qualified. South Africa is basically qualified for the semi-finals. They'll be there. You know, what are you predicting for tonight in terms of a performance? India's been so good. South Africa, you've been slight. It's taken you a little while to come around on them, but I think you're getting there. What are you thinking for tonight?
Yeah, look, let's focus on, I guess, India first, with Hardik Pandya officially ruled out of the World Cup now. KL Rahul moving up into the vice-captain slot. I don't think anything's going to change for India. I think it's going to be business as usual for them. It's interesting that they've changed the sort of thought process around these long-form tournaments where it's like, oh, we need the consistency. Can we do it again? It's more like, we'll just do what we've been doing every game. You know, it's nothing different. Business as usual for India. They'll go out there and they'll bowl well, they'll bat well, they'll field well. We know what India is going to bring. South Africa, they are a little bit more of a wild card for me. I'm really looking forward to this game. I think it's going to be spectacular in a word. I don't know what South Africa is going to do in terms of their bowling, whether they're going to go with an extra spinner or the extra fast bowler in Kutsia, who I love to watch bowling at the moment. But look, I think it's going to be a great game. I can't pick I can pick a winner. I think India will win, but I think it will be a little bit closer than we all would have envisioned at the start of the tournament.
Yeah, look, it has the potential to be a real cracker, and we've said that a few times, and things haven't quite panned out. We talked a little bit yesterday about how, you know, the games just haven't been as close as we might have thought that they would be at various points in this tournament, but let's hope we get another massive game. I think we'll leave it there. There are so many permutations for all the different games coming up with Afghanistan and Pakistan and New Zealand and all these sides sort of now fighting for the last semi-final spot. So I'm sure we'll look at them over the next few days. Of course, we'll be back again tomorrow to talk about that India-South Africa game and every day for the rest of this World Cup. There's actually not that many days kind of left of this tournament in terms of the pool games and then into the semi-finals and finals. So, yeah, we're coming into the home stretch and we're sort of really, really enjoying the way that everyone is interacting with us. As I say, every single time I'm on here, Baldy made a very nice plea yesterday about how the kindness is really having an impact, and that is no joke. It's really, you know, light brightening our day. I think Raj has called various people, Robin Blackwood in particular, I think that the MVP of the day, and it's been great to have all these comments. So yeah, keep them rolling down in the YouTube comments and on all our socials. And you have a wonderful day. Obviously, a pretty flat day, I'm sure, for most New Zealand supporters out there. But yeah, keep your spirits up. We're still on paper, still favourites to finish fourth. We'll try and end with that. So yeah, have a lovely day, and we'll see you all again tomorrow.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.